really the main quality is that they like blew us away. And like anything short of that isn't it.
So hi everyone. So today we're joined by a very amazing guest called Dave Fontenot. So Dave is a founder of MHacks, former VC of Backend Capital that he co-founded with Lucy Gao, and also is now a founder of HFO, which is an upcoming accelerator trying to compete with the likes of some of the biggest startup accelerators out there. So Dave, so could you just, I just wanted to start off with like, what was your experience like living in monasteries? So I read on your LinkedIn that you'd lived in some monasteries in like some different countries of the world. So what were your experiences like, and how did that humanize you as a person? How did that make you think about life more differently?
That's a great question. It changed me so deeply that it's hard to know where to start. I mean, I guess I can start with this. Like, the reason I've done a lot of inner work since then, and I think one of the driving forces that ended up bringing me to the monasteries and to doing those meditation retreats and stuff was my first big heartbreak. And I really was confused about what happened. I didn't really understand it. And I think more broadly, I realized I didn't really know myself that deeply because I didn't spend that much time alone back then. I love people, and it was just so natural for me to spend all of my time with other people. And I grew up in like Miami with, you know, Dominican family and everything, where we're like always doing stuff with the family and hanging out with our cousins and abuelita and everything. And so I remember after that kind of heartbreak, I was trying to figure out what was going on. And I just realized that at a deep level, I didn't trust myself and I didn't know myself. And so I wanted to change that. And I suffer from pretty severe ADD, and I was on ADD medication at the time since I was in high school. And I wanted to get off of it and just be able to build natural concentration. So I started really getting into meditation. Oh, it was the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life. Even though from like a minute to minute standpoint, you're kind of just sitting and breathing. I just got to kind of, I don't want to say like build this inner world, but just more discover it. This deep sense of home inside. And it's a place that I return to over and over and over again. And it's where I go to when I need to make big decisions. It's where I go to when life is really challenging, when I'm feeling overwhelmed. I go back to this place, this home that I've cultivated and really discovered through meditation.
That's really great that meditation had such an impact on your life. And so you had mentioned a bit about ADD and ADHD. And so ADD, having ADD. So one of the people on Twitter wanted to ask you some questions about ADD and ADHD. Mm-hmm. And this is coming from John Conkey. So he asked me to cover some ADHD and ADD content. And given that you are also like an ADD, ADHD person, like how did you kind of navigate the fundraising landscape as an ADD, ADHD founder and just being a founder in general? Like, what advice do you have for people out there who are struggling with the same issue? And yeah, anything you could share on that?
Yeah, I would say two things. One, I love working with other people. And so the types of work that involve other people, like jumping on calls and like meeting people or having a lot of like one-on-ones, I really enjoy that work. And it's easy for me to stay engaged. I almost feel like in a way the ADD kind of lends itself to enjoying like the variety of meeting a bunch of different people and getting to know how they think about investing and all this stuff. So I actually, there's a part of me that quite enjoys the fundraising process. It's instead of thinking of it as fundraising, if you can kind of reframe it, is you get to know a lot of people and understand how they're thinking about the world. It's very, very engaging. So that's one thing. The second is that I built a team and I picked, you know, co-founders and partners that balance me, that have strengths where I have weaknesses and stuff. And so like my co-founder, Emily, for example, like she's the opposite of ADD. She is like super organized, has very structured ways of thinking, is very good at building processes. And so so in terms of the people that I've chosen to work with, from Lucy to Emily and Evan right now, and Clara and the rest of our team, I think the real key is the other people I've surrounded myself with, both see me deeply and accept my ADD self, but also kind of balance that with their own strengths. And that's what makes the really powerful combo that's been kind of driving HF0 forward.
Yeah, so to sum up, you basically said that the fundraising process should be reframed as you getting to meet and interact with a lot of different people, from a variety of investors to also founders yourself, and just in general meeting different stakeholders. And then the second thing you mentioned was this balance, like striking a balance between ADD and ADHD founders, with complementing it with people who aren't in that same situation, and just pairing those things so that they have complementary attributes and complementary skills as well. So my next question is, so what exactly is HFO, and what is at the heart of HFO? Like, what makes it different from other accelerators? And also another timely point is, I wanted to mention a bit like how you guys are fundraising at the moment. So like, what has that experience been like? And how have you navigated that as well as an ADD and ADHD founder?
Yeah, so you asked, you know, what the heart of HF0 is, and the answer is really clear. It's Emily. So my co-founder Emily, when people ask like, oh, what if someone else tries to do what y'all are doing at HF0? I'm like, well, they don't have Emily. So that's really the heart of it. She's like the best community builder I know. And a lot of y'all listening probably are wondering what this HF0 thing is. Let me take a step back. So HF0 is the most selective startup residency in the world. It's mainly for repeat founders and first-time founders who already have breakout traction. We only work with 10 teams at a time, and it's incredibly selective for that reason. You know, thousands of founders apply. We interview hundreds and hundreds on Zoom. We fly out the best 100 or so teams, and then we only take 10. And so we work very closely with the founders, and we try to take care of everything in their life so that they can just build. And so there's not really another product out there like this. Like, this isn't an accelerator. It's not an incubator. It's a residency. The founders essentially live in it. Like, actually, like, everyone has their own bedroom, their own bathroom, their own workspace. The first day of the batch, a doctor of physical therapy comes and helps you set up your workspace perfect for your body, which a lot of founders, they work so many hours, but they haven't stopped to think about how to actually set up a workspace for their body as a human being, so that when they're working those long hours, they're actually in good shape. We have a personal trainer at the house every day. And kind of like our broader thesis is all about subtraction rather than addition. So instead of adding stuff, instead of adding content, or like a lot of accelerators, incubators have workshops, this and that. No. HF0 is not about that. It's very different. It's all about subtraction. So what we do is we kind of like audit how the founders are spending their time, and we figure out all of the things that a founder is spending time on that aren't building or selling. And we try to subtract those things from their life. We try to abstract it out so that they can free up all of their executive function to build their startup. Because it's so hard to get a startup off the ground. It's really fucking hard. And I've tried and I failed like multiple times. But if you're in this container where there are no distractions, everything is taken care of for you, there's no excuses, it's just up to you to build and sell, I see founders just move like, you know, most of the founders who do the program are already really productive. And then I see them have the most productive 12 weeks of their life every single time. That's the thing that people say about HF0 after. Every time they're like, wow, that was the most productive 12 weeks of my life as an engineer. And that's what we deliver on. And so it's a bit different than, you know, accelerators and incubators. That said, the container that, you know, other programs offer with like demo day at the end, that kind of pressure cooker is really helpful for this, and does help people focus in, but no one's, you know, taking it to the level that we are. And in a way, like, our product is built from the ground up to give you back time as a founder. And that's what makes us different than everything else out there.
That's really amazing to hear firsthand from you what exactly you're trying to build with HFO. And so I was wondering if you could lean into more discussion about, like, what is exactly some of the failures or startup failures, and what has been some of the learning? So you'd mentioned a bit on that, like, in your previous point, but, like, I think what could be beneficial for my audience today is to, like, learn, like, what exactly were those mistakes that you made as a first-time startup founder, as a second-time startup founder, or how many ever startups that you made, and, like, what have been some of those learnings that's translated into HFO as well? Like, what could you share on that front?
The biggest thing is, and I see this all the time with founders, the biggest thing that holds founders back is fear. That there's some really hard challenge in their business and they're not willing to face up to their fear around it. They'll solve problem number two, problem number three, problem number four, number five, no problem, barrel through them. But the one biggest problem in their business, as a founder myself, like, I'm speaking from my own experience, I found every way I could, you know, subconsciously, this wasn't, you know, conscious, to solve every other problem except the one deepest core problem. And so that's the biggest mistake that I made, you know, multiple times, and the biggest thing that I see with founders. And so some of the power of HF0 is that there's really no excuses, right? There's other folks around who have a lot of context. I mean, we're pretty much living with you for 12 weeks. We have a lot of context and we can often see what that number one challenge is that you might be afraid to face, and can help you face it. And it is a scary thing for a lot of founders. And it's a blind spot for a lot of folks, because you can have, like, every other thing queued in, but, like, that one core thing is not there. And then because that one core thing's not there, you don't end up hitting product market fit, right? So one of my previous startups was called Loco, and it was one of the first mobile Craigslist for colleges specifically. And we started taking off in Michigan. We started taking off in, like, at UMass Amherst and University of Florida and other places. But at the end of the day, like, me and my co-founder Raj at the time, like, we didn't want to be spending our life building that. And so that was one of the things that we weren't willing to face. We weren't like, things are going well, this and that. We just, like, there were so many things we, like, had fun and loved building, but this just wasn't it. And it wasn't until one of Raj's mentors actually told him, it's like, hey, the biggest risk that you have as young technical founders is that you end up raising money and spending 3 to 5 years of your life working on something that you don't care about. And so at least in that context, like, that was the thing that we were ignoring, that we were running away from. That was our blind spot. Yeah. So just to sum it up, like, the biggest mistake that I made was, I think I'm good at having fears and acting despite them. But the challenge with that, if you don't come to understand the fear, is that it creates blind spots. So you might be acting despite it, but you might be missing the most important thing.
I think you summed it up perfectly. And I was just wondering if you could lean into more, like, what exactly does it take to find a problem worth solving for? Like you said that sometimes people, young people, don't like solve the problems that they have a deep passion for. So like, how do they find this problem that they're so deeply passionate about that they would spend nights working on it? They would just be in build mode, hustling, trying to get things off the ground. Like, what could you say for somebody listening today on how they can find that idea for them? Just summed up in like a few words.
It's less about the idea. It's more about what your day to day is like. And the most important component to that is your customer. So like the one thing that's going to stay somewhat constant through your business is the audience that you are serving, the customer you're serving. And so if you enjoy spending time with those people, you enjoy empathizing with them, and you know, you like being around them, then that's great. That's the thing that I would look for. It's hard to find the exact right idea, the exact right problem. But if you find the right audience, and you like, for example, for us with Loco, it was like college students, and we wanted to be spending less time with college students, not more. We were like trying to drop out and go start a startup and be part of this thing going on in San Francisco and all of this stuff, and building a product for a bunch of college, like that wasn't where we wanted to be at. I wanted to spend time with hackers. And so that was what was really making me feel alive. So after Loco, after we decided not to keep pursuing that, I just kind of devoted my life at the time to hackathons and getting more people into building stuff. And that was so rewarding. And like, I didn't care. I loved it so much. I didn't care whether it was a startup or whether I was getting paid for it. I did it for free. I just said, if you can find an audience, if you can find a set of people that you care about so much that you would be willing to serve them and just do whatever you can to solve their problems and help them for free, that's a good sign. I would follow that.
I think that's a really interesting point that you mentioned about helping people for free and finding this passion as something that you're just so deeply involved with and so deeply passionate about. And that's how you know, like, this is your life's work, kind of. And so my next question to you is, so you co-founded Backend Capital with Lucy Guo. So what would you have done differently in the fundraising process, in the VC process? And like, I also noticed that you backed a couple of unicorns as well. So what drew you and convinced you to back Ramp? And what made those founders stand out as in comparison to, say, some of the other founders that may have pitched you?
Yeah, so there's a couple of questions there. What would I change? Honestly, like, our first fund, like the first backend fund, came together like really quickly initially. Like, Lucy was just crashing on my couch. We've been friends since we were like 18, 19. And she started asking me for deal flow. And I was like, oh yeah, like Sally's starting a company, Faye's starting a company, Johnny's starting a company. She's like, shit, you have a lot of deal flow. We should just start a fund together. And then I was like, oh, I would love to start a fund with you. And then 2 weeks later, we had our first close. So I wouldn't have changed too much about that one. And I really loved working with Lucy and building backend with her and everything. And we got to try some experiments while we were doing it. And one of those experiments, you know, ended up turning into HF0. So it'd be hard for me to say what I would change. I just feel so grateful about the way that things worked out there. I mean, I remember we started the first HF0 batch February 15th, 2020. And then like 2.5 weeks in, COVID was hitting and we needed to shut it down. And it was kind of the masterpiece of my life. It's like a monastery meets a hackathon with like VC backing. It was great. It was like all the things that I was, it really felt like the universe was flowing together. But there's not much I would change there. I mean, in that moment, I was like, oh man, did we make a huge mistake? Like investing almost 10% of our fund in this thing right before COVID hit, like definitely felt like, man, we had bad timing then. But then I flew to Taiwan, you know, right after that, learned Mandarin, built political relationships, figured out how to get visas. And then I flew a bunch of founders to Taiwan to run the full first batch, like 9 months later, 10 months later. And that That's yeah. So there's I wouldn't change too many things. I think we got things went really well and we got really lucky and like those first three we backed three unicorns in our first year investing. So not too much I would change. I remember at the time we had backed, Ramp, Pave, and Fabric, and we were stoked on them. But then like Clubhouse had taken off and I really liked using Clubhouse. I was like an early user and stuff. And I was like, damn, how did we miss Clubhouse? But even that I wouldn't change too much. Like Ramp, Pave, and Fabric are making a lot of money, which is great. So yeah, in terms of how those founders stood out, well, the Fabric founders, I was the first product person at Fabric, after the founders, of course, before starting backend. So we already knew them well. And I had been working with Ryan Bartley for some years at that point and different contracts and stuff. And he's really brilliant. So I already knew him. When we met Eric from Ramp, he just immediately blew us away. And this is the thing, right? People are like, oh, what, qualities do the founder have? This, that, the other thing. Really, the main quality is that they like blew us away. And like anything short of that isn't it. So that's more, it's like, I always tell people we look for three things. We look for grit, storytelling ability, and product sense. But like really at the end of the day, what gets you to back a founder, because we meet so, I mean, we get so many good applications at HF0. We get like so many of the teams just actually good. And I think we'll probably raise funding and like should get backed and stuff. We only work with 10, right? So how do we pick those 10? Well, it's the teams that really blow us away that like after meeting them, we're just like, whoa, those folks were a force of nature. Like what just happened? Like, I want to be a part of that. So that's, it's really more this kind of intangible quality of like blowing people away. Yeah. Eric, like, I mean, like 10 minutes into talking to him, we were just like, whoa, this guy's got a plan. He's going to take over the world. Like, holy shit. How do we get involved here? We ended up, getting involved, introduced like three of the first 10 people for like their launch team and stuff. And that's been fun. I mean, it's been incredible to witness their execution and to give you an example of like, Eric, even a year into Ramp when things already were taking off, I remember it was like a Friday and he just called me and I was like, hey, Eric, what's going on, man? And he was just like, hey, Dave, I just want to give you like an update on, what we've been up to at Ramp. And he just took the time on his Friday evening. Like he could have been out, he could have been doing whatever. His startup was going well. He took the time to just call his early customers and his early investors and just update us on how things are going. And there wasn't like an agenda, there wasn't anything. And I still have never really had another founder like just do that. And he did that. I remember he did that twice back then. And I was just like, damn, like he's just probably the founder who least needed to do that as things are going so well. But he just was going above and beyond because he just actually cares.
So firstly, I wanted to say congrats on all the success of your first fund for backend capital. Not too shabby investing in three unicorns and doing some amazing work to help out founders. And now again, that same kind of thesis has gone back to helping founders, but creating such a world-class atmosphere for them to work on the ideas and just to go into that build mode. So if you're listening to this podcast right now, I have an open opportunity to reach this audience. So if you want to reach college students and freshers interested in startups and venture capital, and just in terms of the demographics, the age of 18 to 22 is the highest age demographic in India, and US are the two largest country demographics of listeners for this podcast, email me at bizpodruhi@gmail.com. So thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode and hope you've learned something new.